White has never been my colour. It has always made me anxious. I don't like the pressure it creates. It expects too much of me. I have to play more standoffishly with my young son, eat more mindfully, and wear the right hued lingerie. So when a close friend invited me to see her spiritual teacher, I had to scramble to find some white to wear. My little sister let me borrow an all-white cotton summer dress, a dress she would end up never seeing again. It was the last day of my period. I didn't feel overly concerned because it was so light at that point. But the pressure of wearing white forced me to go to the ladies' room to make super absorbent sure I was all set before getting in line to see my friend's spiritual teacher. The love in the room was sublime. As I approached him, I could feel the static-like energy of spiritual forces at work all around me. He was seated in a regal-looking chair. Once I was standing beside him, he took my hand and told me to come to see him in Brazil. I either just nodded or said, okay, slightly dazed by the intensity of his gaze. Then I was directed to sit in a chair near him to have his entities work with me. I felt so warm and peaceful. Time melted and morphed. It was unclear how long I was sitting there. I just felt this heaviness and knew I needed to stay seated. And then, as soon as the heaviness lifted, I knew I could leave. So I went to stand up, still drenched in utter bliss, and noticed an odd sensation. My dress, or rather my sister's dress, was clinging rather tightly to my backside. My first hope, or thought, was that the bucket seat of the chair and the warmth of the room must have made me sweat. But immediately after that thought, I knew what had happened, so I sat back down. I considered my options. I could strategically walk out of the room with my back to the wall, slightly smiling to distract attention from my odd choice of exit. I could feel shame for turning this white dress to a very conspicuous shade of red. I could make every possible effort to hide, deny, and dismiss the fact that I'm utterly female. Or I could stand up with my head held high and walk at a calm, normal pace across this room with several hundred very spiritual people doing very spiritual things and just let my red be a part of it. I'm not sure I've ever made a grander exit. Of course, I would never have contrived or created that opportunity to own my red so publicly, at least not consciously. But in the face of being ashamed or living my truth, that the body is sacred, I'll always choose to embody the latter. And I have to admit, I felt crazy triumphant when I got to the cafe of the spiritual center to change. I had walked out of an atmosphere so spiritual, it was nearly disembodied with absolutely zero shame that I was very clearly in a body. The sheer bravado of my body still makes me laugh. The fact that the body never lies. A small piece of my power came with me when I left that room with such inviolable dignity. It's one thing to know cognitively that I've nothing to be ashamed of for being a woman. It's something else to act based on that knowing. As a theologian, I have studied the divine feminine to honour and give voice to what's feminine within me and in others. I wanted to provide a sense of balance to our ideas of what's sacred. I also found validation for how I exist in the world. I move from within. I live in a deeply intuitive way, which is how the divine feminine works. The internal terrain is as significant and important as the external surroundings. Take, for example, the voice of the divine feminine in an ancient text that dates back to the first century titled The Thunder, Perfect Mind. Verse 30 to 31 reads, "Since what is your inside is your outside, and what you see on the outside, you see revealed on the inside." So I've made a spiritual practice of going within and trusting what that small, unassuming voice has to say. And then I believe it enough to take action on its directives. The Gospel of Mary Magdalene, translated from both Greek and Coptic, contains wisdom that Mary received from Jesus in a vision. She even reveals how she sees or receives this and other visions of Jesus. Then there's a passage at the end where Peter, aka the Rock, doubts everything Mary recounts. His primary peeve is that he can't believe or begin to understand why Jesus would reveal all this secret wisdom to Mary, a woman. In other words, the sheer fact that Mary Magdalene is a woman should have invalidated her from being the one to receive these visions. And yet, somehow, it made her the perfect disciple because she could see Jesus in this very inward, mystical way.